Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's January 16th. This is the second of three classes on parenting of teenagers geared towards fathers. I'm going to repeat this at the end. It's mentioned right now. Next week's class, which is going to cover physical development of teenagers. Next week's class is not going to be in this room. It's going to be upstairs because the nature of that class is such that I don't want anybody walking in on that class. Also, next week's class is not going to be recorded. So if you want to hear that class, make sure to be here for that one. We can't, that is Torah Shebaal Peh, and it's not going to be recorded. There are two things I want to do tonight. One is to cover the topic for tonight is social development. But before we do that, I want to touch on the issue of where we as parents, as fathers, can and should assert our authority. Last week we spoke extensively about letting go and not asserting authority and trying to let go of control of our teenagers. And we mentioned how it's a losing battle anyway, that they are going to be becoming more and more independent, and that's going to happen one way or another, and that the more we try to assert our authority, the more likely that it will end very, very badly. And we gave many examples of letting go. But it goes without saying that we're still the father, and we have the right to drawing certain lines in the sand. And not only do we have the right to, we must. You can't have just a hefker. You can't have it be like do whatever you want. There's got to be some sense of rules. So I want to give some examples where we do need to make rules, and also some guidelines about making those rules with teenagers. Now, a lot of the rules that we have that are acceptable even with teenagers are what I mentioned last week, what I call house rules. And house rules vary from family to family. Every household has their own version of house rules. And house rules can apply, can and should apply to teenagers. There's no reason why they can't apply to teenagers as well. Most of the time, those house rules, they've been in place the child's entire life, or at least whatever they remember. So it's not a question of making new rules, it's just essentially asserting that those rules are still in force, even though you, my child, are no longer a child. You are now 12, 13, 14 years old, but those rules are still in force. The difference is that the way that we project them to our teenagers has to be in a way that does not come across as simply a matter of control, simply a matter of you do what I say because I told you, and that's why you do what I say. It's got to have a little more understanding to it. Even if it's true that he has to do what you say, but you don't win friends and influence people by telling them to do what you say because you said it. So you're not going to win in the long run with that kind of authoritative statements. So I mentioned last time, I'm going to repeat this, that a house rule should first of all be universal, meaning it applies to the entire family. It applies to the teenager, but it also applies to the younger children. It applies to the adults. That what I'm telling you is also for me. It's also for mommy. It's for everybody. This is a house rule. It also should make sense. There should be some sense to it. It should be clear, and it should be something which, if there is an explanation, it should be explained. We have a curfew in the house. We expect all household members to be home by, make up whatever number you want. Everybody should be in the house by midnight. Why? Because we feel it's unsafe to be out later than that. We don't want to have situations where people are roaming around after that time. Now, your teenager can disagree and say, well, I don't think it's unsafe. And to that, the answer is, that's a valid opinion. When you have a household, you are welcome to have whatever curfew you want. That's perfectly fine. But we're the parents, and this is our home, and we're not comfortable with it. We don't feel safe that way. So, therefore, we want to have this rule. You can have rules about, we mentioned last time, loud music. Loud music, you can say, listen, this is not loud music after 8 o'clock at night. It's not good for our household. So the teenager can say, but I like loud music after 8 o'clock at night. And you say, fine, when you have your own house, you can do that. But in this house, this is the way it has to run because this is what we're comfortable with. It's perfectly acceptable to say that I, as your father, or we, as your parents, are comfortable with this and we're not comfortable with that. That's a perfectly acceptable thing to say. But again, it should make sense. It should not come across as something that is just there to make the teenager's life difficult. Never threaten. You don't gain anything by threatening. Just state the rule. Don't threaten. Don't say, and if you, anytime you threaten, you weaken your authority. You don't strengthen your authority. When you threaten, then, as we mentioned when we talked about the younger children, it applies even more to teenagers. When you threaten, then what you do is you make the entire rule based on the threat. And then it becomes a challenge. So then, you know, a teenager could decide to call you on that and say, okay, well, you know, so carry out your threat. I'll do it anyway. So don't threaten. Just state the rule. This is the rule. This is the way it is. This is the way it is. I know you don't like it. I understand you don't like it. And other houses do things differently, but this is the way we do things in this house. You can have rules like that. They should also be as few as possible. You don't want to have this situation where there's rule after rule after rule after rule after rule. There should be as few as possible. I made a list here of just a few different things where these sorts of rules manifest themselves in different families, but they are acceptable, again, as long as they're presented properly and they come across as making some kind of sense. Physical violence. There's no reason why a parent cannot assert that you must keep your hands to yourself. Every family member must keep their hands to themselves. It's unacceptable in this family for anybody to be hitting each other or to be using their hands or using force in a physical way. That goes between siblings. It goes between parents. It goes between sibling from children to parents. That's not acceptable behavior. Extreme chutzpah. You have the right to say that's not acceptable behavior. Yeah, you got to temper that because the definition of chutzpah is going to change. If you don't have a teenager yet, it's going to change radically throughout the teenager years. The definition of chutzpah. You may demand a certain level of respect and way of speaking for younger children, but the teenagers will push the envelope a great deal on that. And therefore, you should definitely look the other way and close your ears and pretend you didn't notice it when your teenager says things that are a little bit belligerent. But extreme chutzpah, you have the right to say both about yourself, about your wife. We don't talk that way. We cannot speak in that manner. Also, with chutzpah, extreme chutzpah to teachers. It is not uncommon, I mentioned this last time, for teenagers to say, I don't like that teacher, I don't like that class, I don't like that assignment, I'm not doing it, I'm not studying, I'm not this, I'm not that, you know, that sort of things. I think I'll share with you last time, our reaction, regularly in our home, and our reaction in that situation is, fine, you don't want to study, fine, you don't want to do the assignment, fine, it's between you and the teacher, it's between you and the school, whatever you want. But you got to be respectful. That our children will get an earful for if they demonstrate enough chutzpah that we get a phone call home or that there's a comment in the report card, then they're going to get an earful. because that is a house rule that has nothing to do with you as a teenager. All of us, everybody in this house, has to speak with respect, and it cannot be that you're demonstrating some extreme chutzpah with teachers. Yeah.
So we're saying we should tolerate a certain level of chutzpah?
You're going to have to. You're going to have no choice.
Tolerating or not saying we don't speak like that.
You just pretend like you didn't hear it. Okay. All right. Yeah. It's going to be things it could be out of anger, out of annoyance, that a teenager will say things like, you know, or will say something that's a little bit, you know, a little bit pushy, a little bit, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit. It could be through, you tell the child to do something, you know, they have to do something, and they do the bare minimum, which knowing that that's not really what you meant. But, you know, just, again, we're not talking about little kids, I'm talking about teenagers. You're going to have to accept it. That's the way it goes.
Are you talking about punishments at all, when it's appropriate?
Okay, I'll mention that in a minute.
Can I ask you one question? When a child's like playing loud music, let's say, or coming in late, so you could talk to them about their behavior and maybe corral them in, but if a child's being a machutzah, a chutzpahdik, so by definition they're speaking back to you or your wife or whatever, so what do you say to a child?
I would say in the sternest voice and with the most stern look possible, I would say, that is unacceptable. You're the father. You'll win with that. You'll win with that. You'll lose if you say, if you ever do that again, then you'll lose. Just say, that is unacceptable. That's all. And then you can leave it at that. Just stop it there. One statement, strong with a look. But you got to reserve it for those sorts of things. If you use that too much, then you lose it. My children, to this, even the married children, speak about getting the look from Ima. The look. That's what they talk about. No one wants to get the look. Right? You know, so, and that's obviously reserved for very, very serious offenses. There, you can have red lines when it comes to tznius, with how especially daughters dress and activities that both daughters and sons do. You can have with language, what type of language is used, profanities and that sort. What is going to be the rule with internet use in the house? You can have rules like that. Obviously, drugs, alcohol, smoking, these sorts of things can all have, you can have house rules. Now, your ability to control your teenager out of the house, especially as they get a little bit older, is going to become more and more limited in all these things. They can do whatever they want, and it's going to be between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not between you and them anymore. That's the way it's going to work. But in the home, you have the right to have certain house rules. What about deciding on a camp program? What am I going to do in the summertime? I talked about last time about having the child work on it themselves. They're old enough, they're a teenager, they can work on it. But perhaps it's a type of program that you feel is not appropriate. What school the child is going to go to? These are things that you got to be careful not to take real extreme views and not to limit your children to the point where they're really, really stuck. But you have the right to say, this is what we're comfortable with. We're not comfortable going further than that. The way that we present these things to our children is going to segue into the other point about social development. So I'm going to talk about that separately. Let me just address punishment for a minute. Your options for punishment are very, very limited. What exactly are you going to do to punish a teenager? How are you going to punish a teenager? What are you going to say or do to punish a teenager? Well, you're going to say you have to stay in your room? Well, what are you going to do? You're going to start revoking privileges. So you have to be really careful not to treat your teenager like your teenager is a child. Your teenager will take great offense at that. Now, that's not to say that you can't use that very same statement. If a teenager, we've had this situation, if a teenager is refusing to have a conversation about something that happened. A teenager did something which according to our house rules, was egregious. So sit down with the teenager. Let's say the teenager was supposed to be home by 11 o'clock. They walked in the door at 1 in the morning. Okay, so it's a younger teenager. It's egregious. That's unacceptable. So I sit down with the teenager and say, listen, you know, that what really went against the house rule. You have to understand that that's not acceptable here. And the child kind of like, you know, has that look of defiance. So then I say, I want to discuss your going out again. Here you really violated a trust. We expected you home by 11 o'clock. You came home at 1 o'clock. Your mother was worried sick. We want to know, you know, how can we go about having you go out again and us feeling confident that you will follow the house rules. Right. So if he or she is unwilling to get into conversation, and I've done this, not for this particular example, then you can use the response, I am talking to you as an adult. That's the kind of conversation we're having. We're discussing this. We have a rule. You know about the rule. We're trying to have this conversation. If you refuse to have a conversation as an adult, you are going to force me to treat you as a child. If you were an 8-year-old, your little sister doesn't get this kind of treatment. Your little sister is told that you can't go out at night. And if you're going to force me to treat you like a child, you're not going to enjoy that method of parenting. Right? So it's a way of snapping the teenager out of it and saying, listen, which way do you want it? You want to be a child? You want to be a teenager? You want to be a teenager? That's great. But then we got to have a conversation here. Right? So you can use that. But in terms of punishment, there's very little you can do. Real punishment, there's very little you can do. You can have natural consequences, sort of. If the child is reckless with the car, so you say, listen, it's my car. So I'm sorry. You can't drive my car if you're reckless. I don't want anything to happen to the car. I don't want anything to happen to you. So you know, no car keys. You can do that, but there's very little that you can.
Their phone or whatever.
Right. So if they're misusing their phone, it depends on the arrangement. In giving a child the phone in the first place, I would make sure that the child understands that there are house rules in the use of the phone, and if the phone is misused, then we don't have phones. You know, I would make that very clear.
Their phone and their money, they pay for it.
Okay, so their phone and their money, you also have the right to, you know, as we mentioned last week, their money is their money. But you do have the right to say that certain purchases are not acceptable in this home. Right? We do not allow smartphones in our home, and we don't check you at the door. I'm saying we don't allow our family members to have smartphones. So if one of my children wants to buy a smartphone, we would say that we don't have smartphones in this house. It's one of our house rules. No smartphones in the house. Now, at a certain point, you can't control what they do, but you can control what goes on in your house, and you can do. So you know, it's a child wants to purchase something that goes against your house rules, you can say we don't have those things in the house.
Do you have a house rule that, out of the house, if let's say you're worried about a certain child, the internet, there's no filter, it's just a free-for-all, do you have a rule about, I don't think that's a good home for you to go to, or is that out of our boundaries?
No, you can have a rule like that. We're going to get the social things. You can definitely have a rule about that, but it's not really a rule. See, there's a difference between a rule and an agreement with your teenager. That's not really a rule, because how do you enforce it? What are you going to do, you know? Have a nanny cam on the child all the time. Like, well, you can't, right?
You have a phone there.
Huh? What's that?
You have a phone. You can track them.
You can track them, but how do you stop them? Right? What are you gonna do? Lock them in the room? I mean, you know, they could.
You can turn off their phone.
But if they want to go to somebody's house. They want to go to somebody's house. How do you stop them going from somebody's house? So I'm saying, you don't really have that kind of control on a teenager as you do in a.
Even saying that, I guess if they do it, so they're going against what you feel, and that could create in and of itself a type of breaking what my parent wants to be done, and that creates a culture or a type of friction, maybe.
Yes, yes. So that is a point that I want to make over here, which is also that whatever rules we're going to have, and we're going to explain that we're really uncomfortable, this is, that's crossing a line, you know, that kind of thing, you want to be very careful not to express yourself in a way that makes it seem that if the child does cross that line, that they're essentially persona non grata. You got to be very careful, because your child might cross that line. And if your child does cross that line, you still want a relationship with your child. And you don't want your child to feel that crossing that line means that I'm disowned. What you can definitely make it clear that it's going to be very disappointing to me if you cross that line. I don't want you crossing that line. It would hurt me if you cross that line. You can project that, but never project a message that if you cross that line, you're out. You know, we're sitting Shiva. That's it. You're gone. Like that much, you're out of the will. Like, you know, that much you don't want to project that kind of message to a teenager. In terms of social development, so I think that you're getting the impression as I'm talking over here. I think this is part of the whole picture, which is that your teenager is moving from being a child that takes all of his or her direction from you, and also is controlled essentially by you, to someone who is moving into a position of being somewhat of a peer. Now, we know that we are never peers with our parents, really. There's always a mitzvah kibud av v'aim. But in terms of maturity, the child is moving into a level of being somewhat of a peer. Obviously, there's a difference between a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. But still, a teenager is moving into that mode. And you want to facilitate that. And you want to send the message to your teenager that I am prepared to forge a relationship with you that is not the same as we've had until now. Until now, it's always been, I'm in control, I'm calling the shots, you're taking guidance, you have no real autonomy. And I want to move it into where there's a give and take, where you have a say, where what you say, what you think matters and affects decision making, and perhaps I even get some advice from you, and we have more of a peer relationship. Again, a 13-year-old is not a peer with the parents. Even 17-year-old is not really a peer with parents, but we're moving in that direction. I encourage fathers, especially, more than mothers, especially fathers, and especially with daughters, although with sons as well, to make sure that you have time that is carved out alone with each teenager. That real time alone with each teenager. What I've done different things over the years, but in certain periods when things were very, very busy, so then I had at one point once a week taking out one of the teenagers, just me and the teenager, going to do whatever, whether it's to go get some ice cream, whether it's to go to a park, whether it is just the two of us and just schmooze, and the schmoozing is about whatever. It doesn't have to be serious. It could be just joking around. It could be just spending time with that particular teenager. It's important with kids as well, but with teenagers, it serves the purpose of moving the relationship between the father and the mother and the teenager into more of a peer relationship and not the old relationship. It serves that purpose. The teenager might decide where you're going to go. The teenager, if they're old enough, might drive. The teenager might offer to treat. It changes the whole dynamic when things like that happen. And that's, you're looking to move your relationship with your teenager in that direction. Yeah.
To think each week to take time for one of the...
That's what I did. I mean, it's very hard to make time each week for everybody. And that doesn't have to be done that frequently. But, you know, and it depends on the family. It depends on what's going on at home. It depends on how much time there is and like that. But there should be time. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to make time for each teenager. Just as you make time for your wife, making time for a teenager, especially a daughter, is very, very significant. Teenagers are developing fears, hopes, dreams, and they will share them with you. They will share them with you if you allow them to be safe with their fears, their hopes, and their dreams. If you chas v'shalom ridicule any of them, any of their fears, hopes, and dreams, or if you dismiss them and make them seem like they're unimportant, then they will not share. And you don't want to squander the opportunity, because the first time that they feel that they're being pushed away, it's going to be much, take a very long time for them to come back out of what they, you know, to do it again. They will do so. They will do so because ultimately they know their children, and they know that you've guided them, and they know that you have a lot to offer, and they want to have a relationship with you as much as you want to have with them. They do want to have that. But a lot of times, because we are trying to assert our control, they have to have this bravado of, I don't need you. But if we allow them to spread their wings, they will share, and they will look to share. You have to give them the opportunity to do so and let them do it, and validate how they're feeling and allow them to talk, etc. If the child has, the teenager has, a something that's important to them, something they enjoy, something, an interest that engages them, even if you feel that that interest is silly or that interest is meaningless, you have a son who's very into sports and you think sports is meaningless, but you've got to engage him. If that's what he likes to talk about, that's what he's interested in, that's what he's excited about, then you have to engage him on that level, because that's what's driving him, that's what's important to him. And you don't want him to feel that his interests are unimportant to him. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to all of a sudden become an avid sports fan, but it does mean that if he's excited over the game and he wants to tell you every detail about it, you sit and you listen to it. And you listen to it and you listen to it and you say, oh, wow, really? And you show real interest. If your daughter loves to shop and you, as a typical male, think shopping is what you do when you're missing something, you go and you buy it and you come home, and it's not an activity. So, but that's what she likes to do, and that's what she wants to talk about, and that's what she wants to tell you all about, where she was, then you listen and you get involved and you get engaged, because that's what's important to her. And that's all part of building that relationship with the teenager. That's all part of it. A teenager must feel that we, as their father, is in their corner. When they have struggles, they have issues with friends, they have issues with teachers, they have whatever issues it is, they have issues with themselves. In teenagerhood, you find already people, young people who are struggling with themselves, whether they are struggling to control the way that they exercise, or the way that they eat healthy, or the way they do their work, and they're looking to they're working on themselves, or maybe it's something loftier than that. They want to daven better, whatever it is. They have to feel that we're in their corner, we're behind them, we're with them, we encourage them, we validate them. They have to feel that way. Especially with a daughter, it goes a long, long way. It goes a long way to inquire and to remember what it is that they're struggling with and to say something about it. You know that she studied last night or he studied last night for that big test. When they come home from school, make sure to ask how did it go with the test. And if they say, oh, I did terrible, then you put your arm around him or her and you say, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, you can't do anything about it. It's their schoolwork. But they got to know you're in their corner. And if they're struggling with a friend, they're a good friend, they got into a big fight. This is something which every father is deer in the headlights when it comes to girls, daughters, friendships. It's impossible. We're so clueless about how these things work and why the friction is that. You're not going to get anywhere in trying to drill down and understand it and help and give advice. But what you can be very, very helpful is simply to support, simply to state how you feel for your daughter and how you hope things will improve, and whatever it is. Sometimes a hug. We'll talk about physical touch, hugs, kisses, etc. to teenagers. We'll talk about that next week when we talk about physical development. But
doesn't matter if you know your daughter was wrong.
Doesn't matter. No. Be in her corner. Be in her corner.
She's third of the whole fight. It's all her fault.
Be in her corner. Be in her corner. You don't have to tell her that she's right.
So just say,
you feel for her. I feel bad for you. I feel bad. You do feel bad. You don't want her to, you don't want her to be upset. You want her to be happy. You feel bad. Now, if she turns to you for help, which could happen, if you've developed this trust, she could turn to you and say, you know, Abba, Daddy, Tati, whatever it is, you know, what should I do? How do I... Okay, that's already opening the door. She's turning to you for help. That's opening the door. No, just give her support. Just let her know that it matters to you that she feels bad. It matters to you that she's unhappy. It matters to her that she's had a falling out. Yeah.
So I said, the reality is, like, fathers really have no clue what the, you know, how to even address or to offer it. So is it more of the support, or do you really want to try? Because sometimes you can't even figure out
what
the dynamic is between a girl and her friends.
Right. You know, Rabbi Cavalier is bringing up, let's say you know that what happened, and you know that she did something that was wrong. You know that she, whatever it is. So if she's asking you, you know, then appropriately you can say, listen, I don't know the whole story. I only heard you on the phone say this and this. It seems to me that was kind of hurtful to say it that way. Maybe that's how this thing got started. You know, you can start that way, but only if they're looking for that kind of advice, that kind of help. If they're just upset and complaining, then you just I'll really feel for you. Sorry, you know, just to support them. With teachers as well. The dynamic between the students and the teachers, and what goes on, and between the students and the students, and just in general, all the various social things that go on. Again, it's more complex with daughters, just because nature of females and relationships are far more complex than males, and therefore, as fathers, we are very limited in what we can really grasp and understand and help, but still, they got to know we're in their corner. They got to know that, and they got to know that they are, as far as we're concerned, it's more important to us that they're happy than anything else. That's what's important to us, and we are unhappy when they aren't happy. That's a really, really important thing to impart to our teenagers.
Many examples given were all indirect, putting your arm around them, telling them, you know, how was your test? What about saying directly, I'm here to support you, if there's anything you need to be, say that?
You can say that, but sometimes it's hard to know what that means, especially a teenager. I'm here to support you. What does that mean? We as adults use that terminology, but a 14-year-old, I'm here to support you. What does that mean? You're going to pick me up? What is it? You're going to hold, if I start to fall down, you're going to grab me? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know those words specifically, but to try to relate directly there as a parent, if there's anything you need.
Yes, you can.
Or should we do it through our, you're getting them special rewards, going out with them.
You could do that. You can share with them the time that you had a falling out with one of your friends, you know, and it was very painful. And, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that for sure you can do. That for sure helps. Right? Again, it's the way you would deal with a friend who was down and out, and that's the way you want to that and more is the way you want to deal with your teenager, that kind of empathy and that kind of support. the teenagers as they mature, they mature socially, and social development for teenagers is a big deal. It's a big deal on several levels. It's a big deal, first of all, in that they're figuring themselves out and they're figuring their friends out. And the way that one teenager develops socially is not the same as a different teenager socially. And children who were very, very friendly with each other could become very distant or even very, very upset with each other as teenagers. It can happen. It can happen that they have a falling out and they stop talking to each other, or they start drifting towards different friends, and things that didn't bother them when they were kids now bother them as teenagers. And this the landscape is shifting. It's shifting both in terms of your own teenager's development and the development of all the teenagers that have been this child's social group for the past 5 years. And now it's shifting. The ground is shifting. Everything is shifting. And it is normal and natural for teenagers to reassess their friendships, to reassess who they're close to, who they want to be close to. You have the whole issue with who's in the cool crowd and who's not in the cool crowd. And some teenagers it'll be very important to them to be in the cool crowd, and some teenagers will be very important to them not to be in the cool crowd. You know, you have all kinds. It'll be very, you know, this is a normal, natural thing that happens. And sometimes it's not pleasant. Sometimes it can get nasty, where you're suddenly shocked that this was your daughter's very good friend, and now all of a sudden they're like angry at each other, or she speaks of her friend as, oh, her, you know, that kind of attitude. You're like, what happened? So what you want to very much avoid doing is jumping in and saying, I understand, I thought you were good friends. What happened? There's nothing wrong with her. She's a wonderful girl. What happened over here? Why are you talking like that about her? That is a surefire way of making your daughter feel that you are absolutely not in her corner. Because what you're saying is, you're implying is, what's wrong with you? She's good. You're bad. How come you're not talking to her anymore? You want to stay away from that. Whatever's going on in their social dynamics, you don't understand that anyway, and you want to stay away from judging the decision making that is happening and trying to change whatever happened. It does happen sometimes, and this is unfortunate, where you'll get a phone call from a parent of the friend, the erstwhile friend, that they're now not talking to each other. And the parent will tell you, my daughter is very hurt. You know, your daughter really made her feel bad. So then you're tempted to, like, open up a conversation with your daughter about it. Like, you know, what did you do? You made her feel bad. You want to avoid that. You really want to avoid that. The response to that parent is, I'm very sorry. I'm not familiar with what went on. What's that?
I'll let my wife take care of it.
No, your wife shouldn't take care of it either.
I don't understand it.
It's not a good idea. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. I know they were very good friends. Hopefully they will be good friends again. And I'm sorry for your daughter. I really am. Don't give any assurances that you're going to speak to your daughter about it, that you're going to talk to her, that you're going to have a heart-to-heart. Whatever's going on, it's going on. There's too much happening that the children themselves don't understand. And it's so wrapped up in their own development and their friend's development and everybody else's development. And it's a landmine. It's a real landmine, especially with girls, but with boys also. And it's a real, real landmine, and you don't want to go there.
What about teachers? Because they seem to call the parent and say, can you talk to your child about, you know, yeah. and you want to say, like, you the last yeah. time you spoke about it, it's really the child's, you know, responsibility.
Yeah.
So how do you approach that?
So when we get a call from a teacher, if it's a call about chutzpah, then we talk to our teenager, because for us that's a house rule, that's a red line, and again, as I said, a little bit of chutzpah you have to expect, but if the teacher's already calling, then we have to assume that it was pretty bad, otherwise they wouldn't be calling. Maybe that's not a good assumption to make, but that's the assumption we make, at least at this time. We don't know any teachers that call for little chutzpah. I think the teachers also understand that they need to accept a certain amount of chutzpah. So if it's that. But if it's not doing schoolwork or whatever it is, so we may call to the child's attention. We just may say, you know, your teacher called and just said that you're not doing the work. But it wouldn't be like, how can you not be doing your work? The teacher called and said, you're not doing your work. And the child may say, yeah, I'm not.
What about consequences? Well, then you can't play basketball.
Why not?
Because you can't, you're not doing your schoolwork.
I fully advocate that the school should have a rule that if your grade point average falls below a certain level, they should not be allowed to play basketball. I'm fully in support of that. But that's not my rule. That should be the school's rule. That's not my rule. If the school doesn't have a rule like that, I should try to enforce that. That's a losing battle. I'm not going there. I'm not going down that road. Why? I'm going to stop him from playing basketball. The school says you can play basketball. I'm going to say you can't play basketball? That's a recipe for disaster. I don't want to go there.
So no negative consequences for actions?
For what?
For not doing schoolwork.
He's going to get a bad report card.
But he doesn't care about a bad report card.
He'll have to repeat. He'll have to do school in the summer. We've told our children. Listen, if you don't want to do the work, that's up to you. Just understand that the state has rules, and that if you're going to have to do summer school, that might curtail your summer plans. And by the way, if summer school costs money, we're not paying for it. I mean, it's going to come out of your money. Obviously.
What about if they do the exact minimum to get away with it? They're just happy with C minuses, so you just have to live with it?
You have to live with it. Exactly. I hope you can inspire your children in a positive way to do better, but what are you going to do? Well, what can you do? How can you force a child to study?
But you can say you can't play sports. If you can't get certain grades.
So that is a threat, and that is like then your that's a punitive act, a punitive action.
Okay.
So you can do that, but you're risking a lot. If you do that, you're really risking a lot, because that's only going to work at the very early teenagehood, and as soon as your teenager can throw that off, they will throw that off. It's not a very effective way of doing it. You want the teenager to do it more out of. If you develop a relationship with your teenager, they don't want to hurt you. If you really have a relationship with your teenager, the kind where the teenager is sharing with you things like that, when you express disappointment and say, "Listen, you know, I'm really worried about you. You're not doing anything in your science class. These science classes, these math classes, they're very important for the future. I know you don't see that now, but they really are very important. It's going to affect the ability for you to get into college. It's going to affect whatever." When you say things like that, so if it's done in a respectful manner to your child, then they don't want to hurt you. That can inspire them. Or the other way around, you could say it in a more positive way. You can say, "Listen, you know, I know that you're very smart. I know you're a very intelligent person. I know that you're really able to do that. You can ace this stuff. You know, I'm kind of surprised that your report card looks like this." You could say that. Right? But you want to bring it out, not rather than the threats and you know, punishments. They don't work for too long in teenagerhood. They really don't. Any other questions about that?
One point that with teenagers, the parents should be on the same page, even with the same rule. The child shouldn't know how to manipulate one parent to the other.
Yeah, it's for sure.
A little different, and all of a sudden it's changed, and has this happened, and then there's a whole triangle.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's also
Sometimes it's unavoidable. Sometimes you don't, because you didn't have a chance to talk to your spouse. Sometimes, but yes, you should try to be on the same page as much as you possibly can. That's for sure true.
And I'll let the child not to say, "Okay, you could do it."
Yeah. Or play the parents off each other. Yes. I just want to mention, I mentioned in the beginning that next week's class is about physical development. We're going to do it upstairs, not down here, and it will not be recorded.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.